We're in the middle of a series. We're dealing with the three relationships that we've been emphasizing and will be emphasizing at Trinity Church long beyond the time that I'm here with you. Core relationship number one is your relationship, your close, intimate relationship with your Father in heaven. Number two is a close, personal, honest, open relationship with a few other believers. Number three is your relationship to a lost and dying world. How do we relate to those people out there? And we're taking 3 weeks on that last part, talking about what it is to be lost, and what it is to be found, and what it is to be involved in the process of finding that which is lost. We're in the middle of that three. Everybody clear on that now? I'd like you to do something. On your bulletin outline, there's a page that's printed, and on the back, it's blank. Now, many of you were here last Sunday, and at the close of the message, there was a video presentation in which people said something on one side of a piece of cardboard about what was the case before they came to know Christ, and on the other side was what happened as a result of coming to Christ, how life has been since then. I'd like you to do that. First part of this, when I was lost, and then fill in the blank and write something down there. And then, since God found me, what's different? You can think about that as we're going through the message this morning, but I'd like you to do your version of what you may have seen on the screen last Sunday. When I was lost, this was the case. Since God found me, this is the case. Now let's go to the scripture for one of the most familiar passages in all of the Bible. We refer to it as the parable of the prodigal son, although there are some other characters involved in that story who are also worthy of some exploration. But let's read, or just listen. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired men have food to spare, and here I am starving to death? I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be your son.' But the father said to his servant, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near this house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders.'" Do you believe that? "Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. So when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him.' 'My son,' the father said, 'you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. This morning, as we consider this very familiar parable, I'm going to break all the homiletical rules. Those are rules about preaching. If the homiletics professor came and heard me this morning, he'd scratch his head or shake his head or walk out of me. You don't preach a sermon with 9 points. You just can't do this. So I figured, okay, I won't call them points. I'll call them simple lessons. And if you're really bothered by 9 of them, group them by 3s and everything will be good. There are some simple and some not so simple and some ideas that sound simple but really aren't when we dig a little bit deeper contained within this story. And I'm just going to touch on them with 9. There are a whole lot more, I'm sure. But let's get started since we've got so many to go through. Number 1, no one decides to get lost. All right, let's face it, we don't set out with the idea of getting lost. I don't know of anybody who deliberately got lost. Well, there might be some occasions, I'll draw back a little bit. There might be some occasions in which we would really like to be lost somewhere for a while. But we always want to have the very clear option open to us of returning on our timetable. That's not quite the same thing. That's taking a hiatus, taking a vacation, but it's not being lost. This son in this parable did not set out with the idea, I want to go and screw up my life. I want to go out and be really as low as a person can possibly be. I really want to go out there so that I'm at rock bottom. That is really my goal and intent. Not so. Nobody decides to go and get lost. Nobody decides to find themselves in a position of life where things can't get any worse, where you are at the absolute bottom. Nobody tries that. Instead, this guy had the idea that he was going to make life better. Let's face it, at some point in our lives, all of us want to get out from under the thumb of mom and dad, right? Right? You wanted to? He wanted to get as far away as possible. I can do this life thing better. I've got a better way than dad. Didn't we all at some point? This guy was really cheeky. Give me the money. And then I'm going. I don't think it's part of the story to figure out why dad actually agreed to those terms. But this son, just like most people in life, did not set out with the intention of being lost or finding himself at rock bottom. You can fill in names, maybe your own name, maybe the name of somebody else in the same situation. I had a gal in one of the congregations that I pastored who constantly complained about how she was brought up under such strict parentage. They never let her do anything. Now, I've heard that story from a lot of people. But what was unusual about this one is that I heard it over and over and over again. And I kept thinking in the back of my mind, lady, you don't know where you would be if left to your own devices, if you hadn't had parents who kept something of a tight rein on you. I came to find out a couple of years later, after I had gone from that congregation, that this same woman divorced her husband, left him with their daughter, and was off doing something else. She didn't intend to get lost, just like most other people, but she ended up there. Second, simple or not so simple lesson from this parable. We come to realize our lost condition slowly and painfully. In verses 14 to 16, there's a description about what takes place in this foreign country where this son had gone to squander his inheritance on wild living. It says there developed a severe famine. Now, think about that. We read through that very quickly as though one thing happens, boom, boom, boom. Famines don't happen overnight, do they? It is a slow process. This is going on for a number of days, weeks, months. And if it's a severe famine, it's probably gone on for a good long time. And it happens at the end of his resources. After he had spent everything, then the famine started. So this guy is at wit's end for quite a period of time. And it took all of that time for him to realize, hey, I'm really in a mess here. Doesn't it baffle you at times to see how long it takes people to figure out what kind of a mess they're in? Have you ever been in a position where you were messed up and it took you a long time to figure it out? That happens because it doesn't happen from one day to the next. It happens by such little itty-bitty increments that one day seems so much like the day that went before it and so much like the day before that, and the difference is slight, but that slight difference just continues to add up, and all of a sudden we turn around, that's where I was, here's where I am. How'd that happen anyway? Little by little, he recognized what kind of a painful place he was really in, what kind of a mess. People do that every day, unfortunately. At some point, we make a decision to go a certain direction, and it seems to be working out. And we don't perceive the little itty-bitty steps that we have taken away from where we know we need to be. And other people may begin to recognize what's going on in our lives and where we are and try to say something to us, and we just can't see it. And we turn around sometime down the road and say, oh, this isn't good. I don't like where I'm at. Just like this fellow in the parable, we sometimes come to realize our lost condition rather slowly and sometimes very painfully. Third simple lesson. We try many options as solutions. Isn't it amazing how resourceful people can be at trying to solve their problems the wrong way? We have an infinite number of wrong solutions, and we seem bent on trying each and every one of them before going where we need to go. Oh, we try all kinds of things. Maybe I need a career change. That's what it'll do. And we pour ourselves into that. Maybe I need a change in relationships. You know, the mess that I'm in really isn't my fault. It's the fault of all those people that I'm around. What I need is new people. So we'll change our relationships and figure that that's going to get us out of the bind that we're in, make life better. Everything's going to work so much better. Sometimes people turn to rituals. Sometimes they say, well, maybe if I just go to church. Now notice, there's nothing wrong with going to church. I am the last person to discourage people from going to church. But it's not the going to church that's going to do anything. It's the God that you meet there. And that only happens if we're open. There are all kinds of ways that we try to solve the mess that we find ourselves in. It may just be by chasing more money. It may be by finding a new hobby. It may be by working out more. It may be by changing our diet. And some of those things might be very good, but they aren't going to change the mess that we're in spiritually. And we will try everything. This young man, what am I going to do? I'm in a mess. I can't eat. Hey, maybe somebody will hire me. Number four goes along with that, follows out of that. We know where we must go. It is inconceivable to me that it never dawned on this fellow, even though he may not have vocalized it, but it is inconceivable to me that it did not dawn on him before that maybe he ought to go home. I think that describes where many people are spiritually as well. We know inside of us that the problem that we're in, the mess that we're in right now, is because we're not as close to God as we ought to be. In fact, maybe we've walked in the opposite direction, headed for a distant country. We know inside, in the deepest recesses of our minds and spirit, that God is the answer. God is the place to which we must go. But this young man did not consider that an option. Sometimes we don't either. There are reasons that we might find not to go home, not to go to where we need to go. And a lot of times we've used every last one of them. Some of them are so resourceful, I've never even thought of them. We will find every kind of an excuse, every kind of an alternative, not to go where we know we must go. And that's because, number five, pride has to be relinquished. Yeah, there it is, that big word. All of five letters, and we've all got it somewhere. And some a little bit more than others, most of us a little bit more than we ought to have, and a few of us way more than we ought to have. Pride. This guy had to be broken. Verse 17 says it, when he came to his senses. How many people have you ever observed that you keep thinking and maybe praying ought to come to their senses? We can see very clearly what everybody else needs to see in their own lives. We don't always see it as readily in our own. Even for people who walk with the Lord, even for people who occupy churches all of the time, people who sit in pews on a Sunday morning, they know that there's some area in life that is absolutely closed off to God, and at least in that area of life, they're going in a different direction. I know God wants me to do this, but I'm not doing that. And everybody else can see what kind of a mess that's making of life, but ain't going there. Not going back. Pride has come. I'm going to do it my way. Maybe the theme song was from the old Frank Sinatra song. Or, yeah, you know what it is? Yeah, I did it my way. You're mouthing it already. I did it my way. Maybe it's the cry of the age. You know, there's a reason for which that song became as wildly popular as it did and continues to surface quite a number of places. That pride doesn't want to hear a couple of words. Four simple words that none of us ever want to hear, which we fear more than almost any other words put together. I told you so. Do you like to hear that? Why not? Pride. We hate to be wrong, and we hate even more to have to admit that we've been wrong. At least I do. Pride keeps people from coming and doing what they know they need to do. And going back almost always entails an I told you so, and we just don't want to hear it. I wonder, even in the mind of this prodigal son, if there wasn't a sense in which he used his confession as a way of preempting the words I told you so. I'm going to go back to Dad, And I'm going to say to him, I've sinned against heaven, against you. I know it. I did it. So don't talk to me about it. You don't have to tell me I sinned. I did it in order for the words, I told you so, not to ever have a chance to come at him. Have you ever done that? You know, you knew you were wrong and you had to go to somebody, and before you heard it from their mouths, you wanted to get it out yourself so you could put it in your terms instead of hearing it in theirs. Anybody ever do that? No? Just one? Oh my goodness. Somebody else has to come up and preach to me, because, you know, that's me sometimes. I would much rather state my offenses than have somebody else do it for me. Pride. He had to swallow to a degree to go back to his father. Pride keeps so many people from coming back to Christ, coming back to the God that they know they need to go to, in whom all of the answers are to be found. Number six. The Father finds us first. Isn't that cool? And you see the illustration of a bridge with a cross. In verse 20, the words begin like this: while he was still a long way off. While he was still a long way off. Doesn't that describe what God did for us? Paul put it this way: while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Before we ever did it, God provided a way. The Bible also tells us that from the foundations of the world, Christ is crucified. Not that he was crucified more than one time, but that God planned it in the beginning, knowing that if he created free human beings, they would sin. They would not be able to come back to him. And before we ever did it, he provided a way to come back. The Father went looking before we ever left. The Father is out there finding us before we see him. That's the kind of God we have. He is out there looking for us. He has made the provision for you, for me, for everyone else to be found. Now, we're talking about being lost. And we've talked about being lost even more today, but now it's the good part, being found. Is there anybody in the congregation this morning that prefers being lost to being found? Didn't think so. Why do we resist? I want another principle here, another simple lesson. We are unworthy. Get that. You know, when the son came back to the father and said, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. I've sinned. I have really messed up. I'm sorry, Dad. I'm not worthy of anything. He was right. He was unworthy. There was nothing in his coming back that made him worthy of status as a son, after he had taken deliberately his share of the inheritance, screwed around with it, messed up, threw it away. Of course he was unworthy. And so are we. Every one of us. The son stated the truth. But right here is the core, the heart of the Christian gospel. Don't miss it. It's not about the worthiness of the Son. It is not about the worthiness of any sinner. It is not about the worthiness of any human being. It is about the grace, the love, the mercy of the Father. Yeah, say it a little louder. It's not about how far away we've gone. It's not about how deeply we've fallen into sin. It's not about the things that we might think that we can do to get back. It's all about the love, the grace, the mercy, the acceptance of the Father. All of it. That's the gospel. There wasn't a thing the Son could do. To make himself worthy. And there isn't anything we can do to make ourselves worthy. Because God's already made the provision. I continually encounter people inside the church as well as outside, who after a long time will confide, you know, I sing the hymns, I hear the scriptures, I pray the prayers, but if you really knew what was going on inside my mind, inside my spirit, my attitudes, my secret actions, you'd know that I've gone too far off the edge and God really isn't going to bless me anymore. Is that your story? Nobody else would know it. But inside, you think that you know, none of this has ever connected. It's never going to. I've gone too far in my secret life. God isn't going to take me anymore. There is nothing. There is no place. There is no condition that makes us outside the reach of God's grace, God's mercy, God's love, God's desire to embrace us just as this Father embraced his returning Son. Number 8. Because of who he is, the Father offers full acceptance. Full acceptance. He didn't put the Son on probation when he came back. He didn't say, well, let's see how this works out for a couple of days or for a couple of weeks, and then I'll decide whether I'll take you back in the house. Prove yourself first. Oh, a lot of us try to do that. None of that. Instead, he threw him a party. No probation. This, my son, was dead. Now he's alive. He was lost. Now he's found. For those of you who were here last Sunday, we looked at that word lost. And we described what being lost was like. We mentioned how when we are lost, we have no goal because other than to be found, but we don't know where we're going. We don't know where to head. We have no direction. If we don't know where we're going, we don't know how to get there. We accept no authority. We can therefore make no movement. And therefore, we have no priorities because we don't know one thing from another. When we are lost, we are disoriented, confused. We feel out of place. We don't belong here. And all kinds of signals come at us, but they're directing us in different directions. They're showing us different pathways, and it gets confusing. We get mixed signals. When we are lost, we have an uncertain purpose. We have uncertain relationships. And maybe the bottom line of being lost is hopelessness. I want to contrast that this morning with being found. Because when we are found, we do in fact have a clear goal. And because there's a clear goal, God gives us clear direction. This is the way. Walk in it. We find that we are under loving authority. Instead of resisting it and chafing under it, we embrace it. And because we have a goal, we know what our priorities ought to be. When we are found, we have a sense of security. It's a secure place. It's a safe place. We have a sense of belonging. I ought to be here. I feel good here. This is where I need to be. That brings with it a sense of peace. No matter what else is going on out there, we can have a sense of peace inside because we know that we are where we need to be. And because of that, we gain a sense of discernment. Instead of hearing all those signals out there in a sense of confusion, we can begin to discern the ones that we ought to listen to from the ones that we ought to ignore. When we are found, we know whose we are. We know the one to whom we belong, and because we know him, we can then know who we are. So many people want to find out who they are. First, we need to know whose we are. Then we find out who we are. Then we know where we're going. And maybe the bottom line of being found, just as the bottom line of being lost is hopelessness, the bottom line of being found is hope. The last of the simple lessons. Being found is cause for celebration. In this parable, Jesus is really coming to the culmination of three parables. In the earlier parables, he talked about a lost sheep. And when the sheep was found, the shepherd threw a party, celebrated, called people together. A woman lost a coin. And she turned the place upside down, swept in places she hadn't swept in years, probably. And when she found the coin, celebration. Hey, call the neighbors, call the friends, rejoice with me. How much more then? And I believe this is the point of the parable being where it is. How much more then should we celebrate and rejoice over the son who's returned to his father's house? You know, this is about a son who left his father's house, squandered all of the living, and came back. It's an illustration that many of you have experienced in your own lives, maybe not quite as dramatically, maybe even more dramatically. You wrote them down a few minutes. How many of you wrote down on the back of that page what I asked you to write in the beginning this morning? Lots of hands. Okay, here's what I want you to do. All right, we're going to exercise this morning. I would like you to stand up, come up here, speak into this pulpit mic, complete that phrase. When I was lost, this. Since God found me, this. I'm not asking for a 5-minute testimony. You know, you don't stop. It's just that one piece. Come on, start it. You can come up and line up while they're speaking. Beautiful. There's more of you. Oh, see, they're coming. You're not going to be the first. The fear of being first is already gone. Bruce is doing that for us.
I had no moral compass, but now I have a strong, true north.
Bruce.
When I was lost, friends and acceptance were most important. And when I was found, God, pleasing God was most important.
When I was lost, life seemed so pointless. Now that I'm found, my life has a purpose in God.
When I was lost, I didn't care. Now that I am found, I have purpose and structure.
Keep coming, keep coming.
When I was lost, I was wandering without purpose. Now that I've been found, my Lord Jesus is leading me to God.
When I was lost, I had no assurance of going to heaven. Now that I'm found, I know for sure I'm going to heaven.
When I was lost, I wandered in the darkness without any direction. Since God found me I saw the light, and he gave me a direction in which to go.
Keep coming. Keep coming. We've got time.
When I was lost, I worried too much. I took a lot of wrong turns. I got frustrated often. When I was found, I found peace. I gave up my own control and found joy.
When I was lost, I just was always searching. I always felt empty, like something was missing. And now I know that God loves me, and he's always watching me every day and guiding my walk.
Celebration. Let's do a mini celebration. I want you to celebrate and applaud together what God has done in these lives. It's good stuff. It really is. For those of you who haven't yet found God or been found by God, don't leave this morning still being lost.